You're listening to 100.9 FM. Jeremy Garlett here with you on Noongar Radio. Good to be with you. And today we talk about health matters right here at Noongar Radio. And we'll just go to a music track and we'll commence the program right here on 100.9 FM and digital Noongar Radio. Hello, Jeremy Garlett here, broadcasting throughout Perth and the metropolitan area and also right across Sydney, Melbourne, everywhere through the Packham Network and the Kimberleys as well. Good to be with you on this particular day. And this is Health Matters, and it's a program that I really enjoy doing, and because it's the people that come in to share the knowledge and information. And the information is about, it is about closing the gap, no doubt. And that's what Noongar Radio is doing throughout Perth and our Packham networks of stations. We say a very hello to all of our people that are listening in the Kimberleys as well. And just to remind you, I'll be back on the Kimberley network of stations tonight and right across Australia on the network of stations, the Packham stations and the Northern Kimberley region. Hello to you all. Thanks for joining us right here. This is a program called Health Matters, and we talk about issues of health. And of course, health is also about alcohol, and it's about drugs. That's a topic today. And I'd like to make welcome two lovely people in the studios here at 100.9 FM. And that's Mr. Daniel Morrison, who's the CEO of Wanjin Aboriginal Corporation. And welcome to the studios of 100.9 FM.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Also, just want to acknowledge my colleague, Colette Wren.
Yes.
Who's here today with me as a clinical governance manager within Wanjining Aboriginal Corporation. But first of all, I just want to acknowledge that where we're sitting today on Wanjining, from part of Wanjining, is that we're sitting on Whadjuk country.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And pay respects to both past, present and emerging elders, of this land that we're meeting today.
Yeah. And, Colette, tell me about what you do.
So, Jeremy, I'm the manager of clinical governance at Wanjining.
Yes.
Which means that I work with all the programs that Wanjining has, and I support the teams to practice.
What I might get you to do, and I don't want to do this to you, but go to the other microphone. I think we're having a little challenges here at 100.9 when it comes to those microphones, but that's okay. It's all good. And let's do that again.
Oh, okay. So my role, Jeremy, is the manager of clinical governance at Wanjining.
Yes.
And in that role, I work with all the programs and services that Wanjining has.
Yeah.
And I support the workers around practice issues. So really just making sure that the way we work with our clients,
yes,
is in the best way possible, that we work in accordance with evidence-based practice,
yes,
and that we make the biggest difference we can do.
Yes. And Daniel, tell me about country and about family and where you come from. And
I'm Noongar Yamaji. My dad's side is Noongar from Katanning down to Albany.
Yeah.
And so then my mum's side is Yamaji from Shark Bay, Carnarvon originally, but we've all spent most of our time in Perth Metro. So yeah, pretty much city slicker. Never actually lived in country towns.
Yeah.
And which I love. I love Perth. And born and bred in Perth. I have family man. I've got two children, Michaela and Daniel. They're 16 and turning 11. And been at Wanjining Aboriginal Corporation for going on 9 years now as CEO. And it's been exciting opportunity taking on this role, but also working with my mob, former mob. It's been a pleasure and an honour to lead an agency doing so much good work within our community, for our community. So it's been, it's awesome. Yeah.
And also, from what I understand, you go back to the ATSIC days too.
Yeah, I was elected on ATSIC in year 2000. So did a stint on regional council, which was exciting as well, and good grounding just to get involved in Aboriginal affairs and get a see of how it all works as far as what we're all trying to do.
Yeah. What sort of got you into, I suppose, the health area when it comes to drug education and community matters when it comes to our people? It's a personal interest, isn't it, when it comes to our First Nation people going into this particular field?
Yeah. Well, My career so far has all been around Aboriginal affairs from within government. The first 14 years was in government, both state and federal government, working in Aboriginal affairs around child protection, family support, justice, as well as family domestic violence. So most of my government public service days was dedicated around those spaces. And going on 9 years ago, I seen a job advertised. I was a bit fed up with government at the time and wanted to get out and have a look around what other opportunities there were outside of government. And so this job opportunity came up with Aboriginal Alcohol and Drug Service at the time, it was called, for executive director. And I thought I had the grounding, had the experience of working with government and the knowledge and understanding how government works and programs. So I thought I had a lot to offer as far as what ADS at the time needed, to get really good programs and service delivery and working with government, not just in silos.
So you've had the grounding, really, the ATSEC days, which were a good grounding when it comes to understanding the procedures and the some of the challenges that face within government as well.
Yeah, definitely know what government are looking for as far as program delivery, and also know, on the flip side of that, know what the community are looking for and what the community are needing as far as services that really benefit and support community to be better and safer and stronger within themselves, both individually and families. So that's where we've kind of directed and driven our service to be the go-to person to be one of the go-to agencies where Aboriginal families and communities can go to get that support for both individuals, families, and the wider community.
Yeah, you nearly answered the first question I was going to ask. Was the how has Wanganjin been a great resource for the community?
Yeah, just going back a bit, August last year we changed our name from Aboriginal Alcohol and Drug Service to Wanganjin Aboriginal Corporation. Wanganjin, a Noongar word meaning healing. So that's more reflective of all the work that we do and wanting to do into the future.
Yeah.
So we not only do work around alcohol and other drugs, we do work around family and domestic violence, child protection, family support, as well as justice within the youth and adult space, and link people back into accommodation, back into training, employment, and general family supports. So AOD is a big part of what we do, and it's a big part of our vision and mission for the organisation, where we understand and acknowledge that alcohol and drugs play a big role in our families, and a lot of the underlying issues to the big mad and sad and issues that we deal with around justice, child protection and family domestic violence, alcohol and drugs is a big factor to those issues. So if we're going to address those issues, we really need to get good understanding and education out there in the community what alcohol and drugs does to our families and individuals. So that's definitely still a big area that we're wanting to focus in and strengthen the way and the work that we do around alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
Because we're hearing it every day that families aren't coping and families are very much struggling to support themselves but to support each other around getting off drugs and so on.
Yeah.
And we've been hearing it for a few years now in regards to methamphetamines and how our families are really struggling with methamphetamines. And and that's been reflected in the client numbers that we have. Our clients our main drug of concern based on our clientele is methamphetamines, which is very much in line with mainstream sector as well. Community are struggling there as well, but I think we have a lot more complexities around what our families are dealing with, what our community are facing, and just the struggles that our families go through on a daily basis. And just for example, the grandparents or the grandmothers that are really supporting our families and just trying to get them to a point where they're aware and educated around what meth is and what meth does, and how they can deal and support their families to overcome these issues.
Because family supports, that conversation needs to be done. It's a holistic approach as well. And Colette Wren, you're the manager of clinical governance at Wanganeen. Tell me about what you do there.
Okay, so I guess what I do work with different programs and different services based on what their particular needs are. So I guess my role is about making sure that all of Wanganeen services works in a Wanganeen way, if you like, so that it does all incorporate that holistic approach to service delivery.
Yeah.
And that we have a consistency across all those services that recognizes how alcohol and other drugs is a kind of a contributing factor across all the other issues that people face. So part of my role is about helping the teams and the services to connect with each other. Part of it is about being playing a consultancy role in terms of helping to guide practice around particular issues, helping to recognize what the training needs are within the organization. But also, I guess, it's more that that underpinning support, so that teams know that they've got a touchstone, if you like, in terms of checking in with, is what we're doing making a difference?
Yeah,
do we need to adjust what we're doing?
So you're actually gauging all that that process too as well?
Pretty much,
The cultural part of it too, Daniel, is really important, isn't it? Because it comes from a cultural perspective as well to healing and of course you're looking at mental health here on the next point we're talking about as well. And it's important to have that sort of synergy in that conversation out there too.
Yeah, definitely. And we take that very seriously as far as the cultural competencies within the organisation. A number of our programs have cultural advisory groups,
yeah,
which are made up of elders and other people within our community that really advise on us on our programs and how culturally aware and sensitive they are and where there's room for improvements. So we take it very seriously. We also ensure that we remain at close to at least 70% of our workforce that are Aboriginal, across the 180 staff that we do have. So that's to ensure that Aboriginal people are there servicing and supporting our Aboriginal families that come through our doors.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that all Aboriginal people want Aboriginal staff working with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Some Aboriginal people don't, they prefer a non-Aboriginal person as far as a counsellor or a support staff member, so that we give that option. Not all Noongar either, so we have some Yamajis and Wongais,
yeah,
and so on. So just mix it up and give people the choice of
the variety of people there.
Options.
Well, yeah. And also the link between mental health and then you're looking at mental health and alcohol issues and drug issues. It's a sort of big area when you're looking at that. Tell us about some of those links that's in within our community as well, and also effectively helping people through these situations. But let's look at the link.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you can't deal with one without the other.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of time, people with mental health issues or alcohol and drug issues, the other comes naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But Colette might talk more in regards to that from a clinical point of view.
Well, I guess firstly, I'd absolutely agree with you, Daniel. And I guess what I would say is that I think the Aboriginal community have almost worked this out a lot sooner than mainstream society.
Yes.
Mainstream services, I think, started really recognizing and accepting the fact that drug and alcohol and mental health happened together probably about 15 years ago, whereas I think the Aboriginal way of working and Aboriginal ways of living, because it's very holistic, that was an intuitive understanding anyway, that these things do sit side by side and sit together. So I think that's been an interesting kind of shift, if you like. I think with mental health and drug and alcohol, there is absolutely no way to say for definite which comes first. So it all depends on the individual circumstance, and it kind of doesn't matter which comes first. Somebody, for example, might be experiencing depression, and the way they cope with that depression is to drink. Somebody might be experiencing anxiety, and they start taking some Valium to try and manage that, and then their Valium use increases. So that's where you've got a mental health issue that then leads to alcohol and other drugs becoming an issue in their own right. But on the flip side of that, if you've got somebody who is, we'll say, drinking too much, then they become dependent on that as their way of engaging socially. And what creeps in is anxiety around if they stop drinking, then they get more and more anxious. So in effect, the drug and alcohol issue has led to the mental health issue, and then one exacerbates the other. So there's no formula in terms of what comes first, but we do know that one can exacerbate the other one, so one can make the other one worse, and it can go, it can escalate over time. So if people tend to use alcohol or drugs to cope with a mental health issue, that pattern gets established and it becomes more entrenched, and then it gets harder to deal with. Likewise, if the mental health issue is there and people are using something to cope with that, it gets very hard to separate the two.
And Daniel, you'd vouch for that, because when it comes to community, there's extended family arrangements, and I suppose this is where the holistic approach is come out, because it's individualised when it's mainstream, but this is a holistic approach, and the holistic approach it's sort of driven us to this process because of our extended family members, and then of course some of the issues of social isolation. And then drug dependency as well. And in some way, it could be, it could be sort of a positive process when you're looking at extended arrangements.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a whole range of issues and trauma that happens in one's life. And just for an Aboriginal perspective as well, around the transgenerational trauma, around different things where people deal with things differently, and trauma that's happened years ago around child sexual abuse or on a mission and all that kind of stuff. So that's happened, and we deal with that. Grief and loss is a big issue within our community as well, and how we deal and support with that. And a lot of people, again, choose to turn to alcohol and drugs to get through that and to numb the pain and so on. So it's a lot more visible, and within each of our families, I would say that we would all have an example of a family member that's gone through it, or struggling around alcohol and drugs and or mental health. I can definitely say that I've experienced that within my family, and I don't see a lot of, I see a lot of families are very similar. They've always got someone who's struggling with it and needing that support.
And let's have a look at some of the common mental health issues that people would come through the door with as well. And again, it's related. There's a correlation between the two, alcohol and drugs. And Daniel, you've put it really interesting too. Transgenerational, which is a I haven't heard that word. Oh yeah, I did have. We've all heard this word when it comes to Aboriginal people. That is that's a really important process to understand, that these things are as a result of. Again, the Royal Commission into Child Abuse is coming up. The redress is coming through, and the various agencies that are working with redress as well. And some of those issues should be coming to people coming to you, both on these very important subjects.
Yeah, definitely. And some of the other issues that are linked to that is linked to the stolen generation, where people are trying to find their family and find their community even, or their country, and without that identity they really struggle in life, and that's when some people also turn to alcohol and drugs. They're struggling to find their family, where they come from, and some being brought up in non-Aboriginal families, so they're just not feeling like they connect or they fit anywhere.
Yeah.
So they're really struggling. So we do support a lot of families around that. And we link in with other services such as Yorgham around their link up program and link them to their family.
How important is that community link to other agencies? It is an important process, isn't it?
It's a massive, importance with our service, because no one service can do all this alone.
Yeah.
So we have to rely heavily on developing really strong and valuable partnerships with other service providers. So we have a number of MOUs within memorandums of understandings within the service with other services around referral pathways, how people can refer into our service and how we'll work in partnership with other service providers supporting one family, for instance, because we can only deal with what we've been funded to do around the alcohol and drugs, family and domestic violence, and justice type stuff, but and child protection and family support, but we don't have accommodation, for example, that we can link people in. So we've got a number of agencies that we partner heavily with, who have a huge stock of accommodation where we can link our families into to get a foot in the door, and we can walk alongside them once they're in the accommodation to support that tenancy and to support them in that house. That's just one example. Then we have other partnerships with other providers around education and employment, where we can get them job ready, for instance, while we're walking alongside supporting them around their alcohol and drug issues and or family violence or family support general. But there's other services that need to be working with us to address other issues that we have no power over.
And again, let's talk about more so alcohol, and also the link between that and, of course, mental health is an important process as well. You're not only a drug agency that helps people through drug rehabilitation at the same time, but also alcohol. Could anyone walk off the street and sit down and talk and discuss some of the issues that they're facing?
Yeah, definitely. It's a self-referral process.
Yeah.
Anyone can walk in off the street, and we have duty officers that we can that are there on a daily basis waiting for people that do walk in off the street for looking for support, and we can link them up with counsellors and on that day, and then ongoing after that we can get regular support both clinically and just general. So we do focus and practice a no wrong door policy as well. So if it's not AOD or if it's some general issue, we can link them into other services that are there to help. But if it's more specific to alcohol and other drugs, we've got all the supports there. We can get daily supports. We can provide Solid Ground, which is a day rehab program, which is run on a daily basis to support people that can't necessarily go to residential rehab, but they just need that daily support to keep them off the drugs or alcohol. And that works for some of our families, because some of our families that need this support, they can't go into residential support because they have family or children that they're caring for, or they don't want to lose their house. So that just daily support is great for them. And also we have residential rehabs in Perth that we partner heavily with, but some of them have huge wait lists to get into. So just that daily support with Solid Ground program is just allows them to get that support while they're waiting to go into rehab, but also on the flip side of that, it gets them ready for what to expect in residential rehab. Most residential rehabs in Perth are based on a therapeutic community model, so it's worthwhile people participating in Solid Ground just to get their head around and understand what a therapeutic community model is and how they need to work in it. And that in a lot of ways helps the individual get to a point where the residential rehab can be successful, and they can see out the program. They don't leave early and so on, or they don't struggle in the culture of the service, because they're mentally prepared and understanding of what the service provided is.
I'm listening to you, and I'm also listening and thinking of the impact that it has on our people, and the social impact And of course, we do understand that, working in this field at the same time. It must have a huge, well, economic as well, and yep. social, and impairment, and lots of other issues there that we're having to deal with as Aboriginal people.
Yeah, most definitely.
Tell us about that impact from you, you know, like going through, you know, I see it through my families, you know.
Yeah.
We've had just recently a person who've taken their life, a young person, and that was my nephew. And anyone feeling unhappy or feeling sad on the program, you can also call Lifeline on 13 11 14 and to our listeners. And if they're going through some of these challenges, do call that number, 13 11 14. It's a time when people can have a conversation as well. They can also get in contact with Wanchanin as well.
Yep, yep, definitely. And our number is 922-11-411. And we do provide that support as well for families and individuals that are just having struggles around their mental health, or as already mentioned, around their alcohol and drugs. So we do that on a daily basis. But going back to the services and that we do offer, we have assertive outreach as well.
Yeah.
We have a number of assertive outreach positions that are based in some of the corridors. For instance, one's in Mirrabooka, one's in Armidale, and their role is to really assertively outreach to community that may not necessarily on a regular basis engage with services. So it's just to really promote to them what our services are and how easy it is and could be for them to access our services and get support for whatever their needs are.
Cultural user friendly.
Yeah.
You know, there's people with culture, and as you mentioned, if clients coming in say, well, I don't want to talk to an Aboriginal person, there's someone there.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's the most thing, and that's the most important part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And that they have somewhere to go. And and of course they need to be able to do something. And the various service agencies that you've sort of noted are pretty important. And it's also like an advocacy as well to advocate for some of those people as well, because they no doubt would need that in this particular time.
Definitely. And some of those workers that we do have, they have strong links and connections to those local areas, and they're well known and respected in those local areas. So that's what we look for when we're looking to recruit new staff as well. We want a good balance of Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal, but also very good local networks and connections. So that works really well. We've also going through an expansion at the moment of our regional sites. So we've got Community Hub in Armidale, which has been operational since the start of this year, on Jewell Street. And that's as we all know, there's a huge population of Aboriginal people in the Armidale area. So we thought that would be best in a long time coming for us to have a site in Armidale that's purely servicing the Armidale region. Again, also for the Midland area, we've got a community hub opening later this year, hopefully in November. We're just trying to finalise the dates for that. So that will be also have a... just widening our footprint across the whole Perth Metro. Mirrabooka Community Hub is also nearly finished being fit out, so that will be operational hopefully by the end of November. And Rockingham, so we'll have 10 hubs or 10 offices across Perth Metro, including family support centres that are Casuarina, Hakea and Bandyup and Wurraloo Prison. So you can access services at those facilities as well.
Yeah.
And then we have East Perth, which is our main office.
Yeah. To all our people who are listening in, this is Health Matters right here on Noongar Radio. We're broadcasting right in Perth, metropolitan area. We also broadcast on the Packham networks, and we're broadcasting right across Australia, in fact. So it's lovely to have you on board, to all our listeners, and And of course, Daniel Morrison, CEO of Wanganeen, and Colette Wren, the manager, clinical governance at Wanganeen Aboriginal Corporation. We'll go to a break, and we'll touch on some other topics as well, right here. And we'll recap over what we've just done here to our listeners who are in the prison at the moment, and there are quite a few people listening. What would you like to say to them? Like, say, for instance, they're incarcerated and in various agencies and in various prisons.
Yeah.
What sort of message would you... Can they sort of elicit support from you, even if they're in?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. We have... we're funded to provide services in all public prisons Perth, and the program's called Reset. So I would encourage all people within prisons... prior to release, up to 12 months.
Yeah.
12 months to release, that you can engage with your transitional manager and at the prison and ask to be referred to the Reset program. And that can get them involved in programs prior to release. And once they're released, leading up to release, we can get them into employment training, and accommodation and just general supports, so we can get them ready for release and get them settled once they're released. And just to ensure that, limited reoffending behavior happens, because we don't want people to get out and then reoffend and then end up back in the system. So we're there to support them to maintain.
So if a prisoner is listening to the program now, and either from Bandy Up or other agencies that might be listening, even in Sydney and Melbourne, I mean, I know that it's exclusively here in Noongar program, but what would you advise them?
Yep,
like if they're in prison and they're going, okay, we want to be a part of it.
Yeah, just to remember the word Reset.
Reset.org.au
is the program that... and just to talk to your transitional manager to get the referral to the program, and we're more than happy to have you involved.
You're listening to 100.9 FM Perth, throughout Perth in the metropolitan area. This is Health Matters, a program that I really enjoy doing, and because it's a conversation. It's a conversation not only between us here, it's a conversation with you listening. And it is an enjoyable program indeed. And every time I come onto the radio, and when people come into the radio, it is empowering people to make a change. It's also not only Daniel; it's closing the gap, really, in some way through our broadcasts all the way.
A big part of closing the gap is ensuring that our community and families are better informed and better aware of what services are out there and how they can deal with different issues and problems that they do have within their family. Otherwise, people can just go and just with their ignorance of not knowing what's out there. So this is a big part of closing the gap, is ensuring people know where to go and get the right supports and what to call different issues, and a general understanding of what mental health is, for example. A lot of families just go along the journey and just not realize what their family member has, and that it is a mental health issue, and that there is supports out there that really can help them deal with it, and how their family can feel a lot more at ease, and knowing that the family member's getting that right support.
Just letting people know, Health Matters right here at Noongar Radio, Daniel Morrison, who's the CEO of Wanganeen, and it is the conversation of education too.
You know,
there's so much education that needs to be done. As you're just saying, that what do I do with my son who's on ice, or I've got a son who's on alcohol, and that's not real, it's not my son, but you know what I mean? What can we do as families? And we need support too as families.
Yeah, definitely. And we provide support to families and to the wider families of people that are experiencing alcohol and drugs. And we find that a lot of families do need that support, how they can support their loved one. And also to support in a way that doesn't trigger Some people think that they're supporting and they're doing different things and that are actually triggering the person to get back on or to leave the family. So we a lot of time offer supports to family, how we can support them. We really like to and want to support more grandparents as well.
Yeah, because they're sort of carrying the baby at the end of the day.
Definitely. They're the main or the matriarch or patriarch of the family.
And big responsibility,
they are big responsibility, and they need to be really well informed and aware of what's out there so they can really support their family members to access the services. And but the elders as well, the grandparents, we really want them to feel supported in a way that they are knowledgeable and know what different issues are and what different drugs, what some of the side effects and or triggers are, what their symptoms may be, just so they can be more aware of what different behaviours are and when they should and can get involved, and because you don't want them to get in harm's way.
If
for meth, for instance, when they can get involved and when they can support and when to kind of steer clear, you need to let them come down and get to a point before they can really challenge them or support them.
And Colette, the triggers, we're talking about triggers. Mm. What are some of those things?
Look, it's very individual, and I guess you know, what can be a trigger for one person might not be for another, and what might be a trigger at one moment in time mightn't be at another moment in time. But there are some commonalities, and certainly relationship issues is a big one.
Communication
with either partners or with parents or with children or within the wider family or, you know, for young people with their peers. So relationships and communication, I think, is a very common one. I think the issues that Danielle touched on earlier about trauma, people's experiences of trauma, and sometimes you know, something will happen that will trigger a recollection of that, and often then people will slip into drug and alcohol use as a way of blocking that out. So that would be a common one. I think stress. Whether people are stressed through poverty is a big one. So if people are struggling to have enough money to get by and to manage, then again, slipping into drug and alcohol use can be a way of trying to just cope with that really intense stress and pressure. Linked to poverty, you're going to have things like homelessness. So again, if people feel that they're slipping into homelessness or if they are homeless, that's a huge, huge trigger. Family and domestic violence. So I think as I'm talking, I'm kind of reiterating that fact that all of these issues are linked, and there are absolutely kind of commonalities across the issues, and then they become triggers in their own right. But fundamentally, you know, people will have more or less resilience at certain times. So for example, I guess an example of that would be if a relationship breaks down, people are going to be more vulnerable then. So some of those other issues are more likely to really impact them, and therefore drug and alcohol use is going to be more likely at those times. Yeah.
It's an important thing you just mentioned too, because I, as I said, I've been involved with policing for 31 years, and the officers that I work with in the, probably in the 80s and 90s, could not understand why a situation has occurred. And it was imperative. It was imperative for me to educate officers to say, well, this is a trigger. This is a link. This is the reason why. And Daniel, that education is important to, again, police officers, people that are out there listening in to us here at Noongar Radio, and service agencies. Tell us the importance of that.
Definitely. Well, I really just go back to what I said before about people need to be really informed of what's happened in the past and what's happened now, and each family's different, each individual's different, and how they relate to different issues or different past issues, it's all going to be different. So really, case by case basis, and really work in a way that you treat everyone as equal and individuals that have different issues that we need to really support with, and provide those wraparound support services.
It's an individual service, isn't it?
Yes,
you're
definitely
dealing with individual people with individual challenges in their lives.
Needs, yep.
In their needs,
And as I said before, no one agency can do what's required for some people, so you may need to engage other services that are involved in that one's life, or could be involved in that one's life, whether it's housing or whether it's other general supports. You just need to develop a really good wraparound support service for individuals and families, which we're all capable of. There's enough services and support out there for the community. We just need to be all talking to each other and ensuring that we do have good partnerships across the sector, as well as across the community as well.
The conversation is an important process as well, and the thing is that it's just not necessarily an agency that's helping, but it's more than that. It's cultural support, and it's community support as well to deal with the challenges that some of our people are facing at the moment. Now, is there a number that people are listening in now that they can get in contact with you?
Yeah, our main number at our East Perth office is 92211411, or you can go to wanjining.com.au. On the web, and check out all our services and programs. But as I said before, like, there's no wait list to get into any of our services. You can just come into any of our community hubs, including East Perth, and you can access one of our duty officers on a daily basis to access our services.
Yeah. No doubt you would have both had some really amazing experiences where you've helped someone. And some of those case examples without the people's names, but tell us about that part of that reward working within our communities and the mainstream communities when it comes to assisting members in the community.
Look, I think for me, the biggest satisfaction is when somebody that you're working with actually starts to feel that they have some control over what's happening in their lives. Very often, I think the people that we work with feel that, you know, that they've got no power left. And I think when we work in a really strong way to give people back that sense of power over their own futures, you can see it. People stand up taller. They, you know, they look brighter. You can sense it and you can feel it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can see people taking pride in, how they live their lives. So you can see people getting a new, a new sense of confidence in their own parenting, for example. And that's beautiful.
Yes,
and
yes,
then you see the kids that kind of, respond to mum or dad because they are responding to them in a different way.
Yeah.
So you see it every day.
It's rewarding, isn't it, Daniel?
Yeah.
You would have had this experience.
Definitely.
Yeah.
One of the services I didn't mention earlier was the Woori Mile, which is a refuge that we run and operate. But just seeing some of the families within that service that we can service them and cater, support those families for up to 3 months. So during that time, we really get to know the families and see the supports that have gone in and gone a long way to ensuring that they're safe, but also ensuring that the mother feels that she has the confidence, like Colette said, to really support and keep her children safe and to keep them feeling they're valued and respected and so on. And our services, we very much follow those values about respect and professionalism and ensuring that we're culturally appropriate. Just for instance, so just seeing that the benefits that that has across our services and across our programs and the impact that that has on our families. You can just see from day one to day 100, for example, that they've really benefited from our service and really, really strong again within themselves and within their role as parents or family members.
Yeah. I could have a conversation with you all day today. It was really good. Lovely to have you both in the studios of 100.9 FM. And I was speaking with Daniel Morrison, and he's the CEO of Wanganjin Aboriginal Corporation, and Colette Wren, Manager of Clinical Services and Governance, I should say, of Wanganjin Aboriginal Corporation. Thank you very much. It was a lovely conversation today. Of course, there'll
thank you, Jeremy.
Be more time.
Definitely. We hope to be back.
Yeah, as well. Yep. And thank you very much. And thanks to the Health Department of WA for providing this particular program right here on 100.9 FM. You're listening to 100.9 FM, and you've got about a minute to go.
Thank you very much to all the listeners. And as I said, just by any... anytime you need support or assistance, give us a call on 922 11 411 at Wanganjin.
And look, I'll just throw in there that I've worked in a lot of services in Perth, and I have to say that Wanganjin is an excellent service and makes a huge difference in the work that it does. So it's a privilege to be involved with Wanganjin, and I would echo everything that Daniel says about come in and talk to us.
Thank you both for coming in the studios.
Thank you.